Welcome to another On Fryer podcast. Folks who are watching on the OTT channel or our YouTube channel, you might notice that I'm Derek Togerson, and I'm not joined by either Darnay Tripp or Todd Strain. That's John Conniff of Matt Fryers. He is the prospect guru. He knows his organization inside and out. We're going to talk to John about all things Padres, including maybe just a little bit of Nelson Cruz, who is, I guess, the anti-prospect because he's a guy who's almost as old as I am, although he looks a heck of a lot better. But anyway, this is the On Fryer podcast. We have walk-up music. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. By the way, thanks to you to OG's, sponsor of the On Fryer podcast. They've got all the beers, they got all the food, they got all the TVs. Go there if you want to watch a sporting event and have a nice time with your buddies or your significant others or whoever you might like to do it with. John, thanks for joining us, man. How the heck are you? It's been a little while.
I'm great. Thank you for having me. And, you know, every time I listen to your podcast, I got to make sure I go to OG's next time I'm in San Diego. I mean, I think it sounds like I've heard it so many times, definitely worth a shot.
You know what? OG's now you just got them to re-up for another year. So thank you, John, for that, because you'll be going there. And I know you do love a good pint, so I'm sure you'll be enjoying a few.
Definitely.
All right, let's jump right in.
More of the guy on beer than I am, but I'm sure there's plenty of OG's menu that I will really enjoy.
Yeah, see, I'm not a beer guy. I've never lied. I'm more of a whiskey and scotch dude, but that's a whole conversation for a whole different day. Definitely. Bourbon is the way to go. All right. So, John, first off, the big news that just came down is that Nelson Cruz signing or agreeing to a one-year, $1 million deal with the Padres. If it's like $720,000 for the league minimum and you're getting Nelson Cruz for $1 million after he had an eye surgery in October because he said his production had dropped because he couldn't see the spin on the ball, I suppose $1 million for a dude who could potentially be the power bat he is not a bad way to go about throwing a flyer at a guy like Nelson Cruz, right?
No, of course not. And I mean, you know, you always got to put these numbers in context. I mean, $1 million is a lot of money to all of us. But I mean, in terms of grand scale things, what the Padres are paying people, no. And it's a very safe bet. And, you know, and I think both you and I like the concept of, you know, whether it's Matt Carpenter or Brendan Dixon or Jake Cronenworth or even Nelson Cruz at first base and having Eric Hosmer back there for another year.
Yes, you're going to get a whole lot more. Matt Carpenter can play over there as well. Yes. They've got adults in the room now who can handle that and can handle the DH spot. And maybe in a pinch, he could even go out and give you a little bit of left field, although we hope it doesn't come down to that. One thing he's always been really known for is being a mentor to young guys in the clubhouse. In fact, he was locker mates in Washington for the first half of the year with Juan Soto before, of course, Soto came to the Padres. So you're a prospect guy, and we're going to get into all that in a second. But how important is it for when you get a young guy getting his feet wet at the major league level, or maybe even been there, you know, a year or so, like a Luis Camposano? How important is it to have a guy like a Nelson Cruz who is willing to be that mentoring role and who's had success, who guys can really listen to and learn from?
You know, I think it's a multi-step level. I think that's a good point because a lot of us that we get this stuff being kind of prospect guys, like, okay, he did well at AAA, so he's ready just to take off the major leagues. And that doesn't happen. I think Jed Hoyer made the comment about a third of development is going to occur at the major league level. And that's going to be with coaches. That's going to be with older players. It's going to be with guys kind of showing them the ropes. And, you know, one guy we're going to get into a lot, hopefully today, is Luis Camposano. And I think that's a great example. There isn't a whole lot for Luis really to do in the minor leagues. And so for him to be successful, it's going to take maybe Austin Nolan working with him. It's going to take some of the coaching staff, some of the pitchers. It's a whole thing. And
Francisco Cervelli, the catching coach. Yeah.
Well, he just left. Yeah. So the guy, you know, Nelson Cruz is going to be a great resource. He's Dominican. He's like a god among the Dominican guys, from what I understand. And you're not locking yourself into some huge contract. I mean, if it doesn't even work out, I think Darren Smith made a point. If it turns into a Robinson Cano situation, this is not going to kill you. This is not going to be some giant deal breaker. We're not paying $39 million for 3 years to a guy that we will talk about later. So it's a decent, I like the deal. I didn't have a problem with it at all.
Yeah, he was 1 year and $15 million last year in Washington, 1 year at $1 million now in San Diego. So one of two things, or maybe both. he wants a prove it deal because he knew the numbers were down. He wants to show people that he still can hit after having the eye surgery. He had some sort of pressure or some skin growing over part of his eyes. He really couldn't see out of one of them. Or two, he really wanted to come to San Diego. And I think it's probably a little bit of both.
Yeah, or it could be just, you know, hey, I'm going to play one more year. I've made a lot of money to set me up and my family for the rest of our lives. I don't want to go out like I did in D.C. It'd be nice to go out, win a World Series, and kind of see what else I want to do. And, you know, anyone who gets older, if you're 43 and a major league team still wants to let you play baseball, I mean, why not? I mean, there's not going to be a whole lot of years left when you're going to be able to do that. So, I mean, more power to them.
Especially doing it in America's finest city. There are worse places to spend the last few years of your career. You're the prospect guy. And I wanted to ask you this because the Padres organization for so many years has been so based on building up the farm system. And Right. We've been looking at it. We've been, when are these guys going to get here? Who's going to be a trade chip to get them somebody? And now the Padres are so stacked at the major league level that we almost kind of forget about what's going on down on the farm, but it's no less important because you still need those assets. You still need to have somebody you can go down and get in the middle of the year in case, God forbid, you have an injury of some kind. Mm-hmm. So from your perspective covering this, have you seen interest change in how much people are taking a look at the guys on the farm, or is it still there, but maybe not quite as urgent, or maybe what our lifeblood or the only thing we could talk about was maybe like it was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I mean, I think it really depends who your audience is. I mean, most of our audience, you know, is aimed at people who follow the San Diego Padres, and the purpose of a minor league system is to make the major league team better, whether the guys are up or use all these prospects to build up a pitching staff of Yu Darvish, Blake Snell, Joe Musgrove, and guys like that, what we can get into. When you're looking at it, like, we get a lot of people who follow us who are San Antonio Missions fans or Fort Wayne Tin Caps, who, you know, they want the Padres to do well, but they're more focused on their own team. And, you know, from a couple of those guys, since we go out there all the time, I still get guys from the affiliates ask me, so are you still in favor of the Juan Soto trade? Because now you didn't win. I mean, you kind of went all in. And a reason why I dislike the all in phrase is my response always is, well, he's back this year. If it doesn't work out this year, he's going to be back next year. So there's about the same amount of interest. People like following who these guys are. I think as the team gets better, it's going to be like a funnel. There's going to be fewer guys that you can sit there and think that can really make, you know, the team better. Are they really top guys? And the best way to look at it is we each do a top 30. There's 5 guys on the site. Mine was first. You know, when you look at this, you should kind of be thinking in your mind, how many top 100 guys are there, or how many guys could make the top 100 overall? Right now on this list, I think there's, being kind of conservative, I think there's 2. I think there's Merrill and I think there's Dylan Lesko. There could be about another 2 or 3 by the end of the year. And, you know, as we were talking a little bit before this went on there, is, you know, a lot of things change by midseason. And so it'll kind of really be interesting to see how it goes from there.
I think the MLB and the, you know, MLB prospects, they're the ones who kind of, pipeline, they're the ones who are best known for putting out these top 100 rankings. And as we know, they're an inexact science. I mean, Ryan Weathers was a top 100 guy. Mm-hmm. Ty France never was. In fact, Ty France didn't even enter the top 30 prospects in the Padres organization until he was damn near winning a triple crown at AAA in El Paso. He's kind of one of those overlooked kind of guys, right?
Well, he was a really different guy in the sense that I saw him play at Fort Wayne, and I saw him play at like Elsinore, and he was kind of built like a linebacker, and he was very, you know, great guy to talk to, very nice, but he was kind of thick. And then I went to San Antonio, and that was when Fernando was there, and I was talking with him, and Philip Wellman, who's now the new manager at El Paso, told me, he goes, you know, you should really keep an eye on France. And I go, you know, I saw him, you know, he gets on base because he gets hit a lot, but I didn't really see that much. And then when I, you know, watched him for 4 games, he lost about 20 pounds, and suddenly he could get to that inside fastball and he was attacking it and things changed. And that's one of the things which I think some of the national guys kind of lose track of, is because you got 30 teams. Let's suppose you got the top 20 guys for each place. That's over 600 guys. And, you know, you can't follow all these guys. And so it's kind of an advantage for us as we get to go see him and we can see the changes, and we could see how much that Ty had been progressing. But his problem was, his best position was third base and first. They tried him at second. And even his manager at the time in El Paso absolutely loved him, said, you know, he could play some second. He's more of a third baseman, first baseman. But he said the bat is real and the bat was. But, yeah, I mean, the guy we're going to talk a lot about today, Jackson Merrill, is probably going to be underrated by a lot of national guys. He's not a guy that was in the perfect games. He was someone who was going to go to West Point when he was a sophomore, and he was 5'8". Then he grew to 6 feet. Now he's 6'3". Then he changed his commitment to Kentucky. And then he was a late round pick. But so many of these national guys, they want to have something where they can find him. So they didn't see him at the perfect game. So he also got injured a little bit this past year. So he's kind of going to be a little bit lower ranked than maybe like someone like me and probably the Padres, who see him play a lot.
He's a guy who is, I mean, he's almost like the no-brainer number one in the Padres system right now. Is that good because you know you've got a stud, or is that bad because, well, you know, there's not a whole lot else out there?
Well, he only played 55 games. He had a bit of a wrist injury. He also had a hamstring problem. But the thing about Merrill, which is interesting, is, you know, not to sound like too much like a scout, he is really a gamer. When you see him out there, he really likes play. And I think you've seen him play too, Derek.
Yeah, I saw him in the Arizona Fall League a little bit. I watched a few of his games at like Elsinore.
Yeah, he's an intense dude. I mean, he's intense in a real positive way. He's the first guy on the top of the steps of dugout, always congratulating his team. And one thing that kind of gets lost a little bit is you're also looking at a guy who's 6'3", 205, and who moves pretty well. And the interesting thing about him is when he was in, after he got up to a red-hot start around, I think, about the second week of May, he got hurt. He nailed his wrist, had a cast on it. Could have gone out to Peoria and just really sulked, why is me and all this. And he figured out a way to improve his leg strength, how to improve his lateral quickness. And when I went out and saw him again toward the end of the year, he was really moving really well. Tremendous baseball aptitude. He's the type of guy who you could put him in 150 games, he'd be excited to go play winter ball for another 60. I mean, you cannot.
It's my kind of dude, John. That's my kind of dude.
Oh, he is your type of dude. I was thinking before I came on this podcast, he is your type of dude. He is an intense guy, and he's a very nice kid, very good interview, but he has a bit of a chip on his shoulder. He thinks he should be better thought of than he is. And the reason is he's from Severna Park, Maryland. I think you know where that is. That's between Baltimore and D.C.
Yeah, a little suburb out there.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think he was the second first-round draft pick out of Maryland in, like, 25 years. So he's always kind of fighting this thing, like, you know, can he stay at shortstop? Did he play against lesser competition? And he really wants to prove, and so far he has, that he can play.
So he's a guy who's probably ticketed for what? Will they bypass Fort Wayne with him and put him up in Double A right now, or are they going to maybe give him a cup of coffee there in High A first, or will it depend on what happens during spring training?
It could, but that's a criticism I would have of the Padres a little bit is that, you know, everyone loves the Fernando Tatis story. You know, AJ kind of went against what some of the development guys wanted to do, but I think there's a reason there's different levels of the minor leagues. If it were me, he didn't play that much. He only had 45 games at low A. Put him in Fort Wayne for about 2 months. It's cold there. He's fine. He's from Maryland. He can deal with that. All right. Let him make sure he's, you know, got his feet on the ground well. He's seeing the differences in pitching. Put him up in Double A by midseason. San Antonio will probably be the worst team in the organization. He's with these guys. He's played with them. Like, I think that was a big problem with C.J. Abrams. I mean, Abrams was talented. He got better when he went down to the minors. He learned how to hit some spin. He learned how to see some different pitches. You know, not everyone is. Fernando Tatis is more of a unicorn. I mean, I think that kind of really hurt Ryan Weathers, too. I mean, I think he was kind of rushed, and now Weathers is not really in a great place.
I think he was getting a lot of the people looked at him as, okay, well, he's a left-handed pitcher who was taken out of high school about the same spot that Mackenzie Gore was. So
right.
He's Mackenzie Gore. So I think people probably looked at him that way and put the same expectations on him.
Well, I mean, the big thing that I saw with Weathers in El Paso was, you know, and his manager, Jared Sandberg, said this too. He's fine when he's pitching down the zone, and he improved his slider and his changeup. where he gets in trouble is where he tries to go up and challenge guys with a like 93 mile per hour fastball, and he's going to get crunched. A guy who's kind of the exact opposite, who knows what type of pitcher he is Jay Groom, who did just very well in throwing the ball down, keeping it down, and occasionally the ball comes up, and it's what's that? And so Groom is someone who the Padres think they can put a couple extra ticks on the fastball and get that curve back. If that happens, he is going to definitely be someone to watch.
Yeah, before we get into the Camposano conversation, because right. You know, we've got Dawson Nola and not a whole lot else right now. No. The guys who were out on the farm, the Jay Grooms, the Ryan Weatherses, the Reese Kinnears, we're talking about the starting rotation, because I do think there are some guys who can come and help in the bullpen this year. But who is the guy who you're looking at is going to have, I guess, the right of first refusal or the best chance to come up and maybe extend and get that if they do a six-man rotation, the sixth spot? Groom's a guy I've kind of been fascinated with since the trade. Yeah. I looked up his numbers. I mean, he was a high-round draft pick. He had good numbers. I think he's had some conditioning problems, maybe some commitment problems. I think some injury issues in there. But if he's right mentally and physically, how good can that kid be?
Well, he had a 3.18 in 10 starts in El Paso.
That's so, good at El Paso.
That's, yeah, you and I can go deep in El Paso. So, I mean, that's very good. What I saw from him, and I haven't seen him in person. I just saw him on television. I talked to some guys who did see him a lot, who worked with him. He has a very, StatCast calls it a four-seam fastball. It looks more like a two. He's a left-hander. The ball has some run to it. And if it's left-hand batter, it's coming in to him a little bit. He has a very good slider. It goes away, and he's got a kind of a tumble changeup that goes straight down. The thing with him is if they can get a little more velo on the fastball when he throws up and get that curve to come back, he could be good. The thing that I found was really interesting was supposedly the Padres had a deal with him in the 2016 draft around where they took Hudson Potts and Eric Lauer, and the Red Sox grabbed him ahead of time. And when I was talking to a guy from SoxProspectus.com, he said the Red Sox problem is, you know, they weren't sure his fastball was going to come back. He had some conditioning issues, a few minor attitude issues. And then they said they had a reason. They weren't sure there was room for him on the 40-man roster. And then my first response was, well, there's room for Eric Hosmer, but not him. So I had trouble understanding that. And even that trade, I can understand all the Musgrove and the Snell and the Darvish trades because they were about money. But, you know, and that one was really strange because Darvish, Groom is the best player in that deal. The two other guys, the prospects, Kimura Rozier and Max Ferguson, were both good, but they had, in my list, they would have been kind of in the bottom of the 20s or that. They might have a chance to have a cup of coffee. Groom, if everything works out right, Groom could be a guy, it could be a number four starter or maybe even as much as a number three. And as we've seen what the prices are on major league starting pitching, you know, that is something worthwhile. And, you know, getting him for Hosmer, and that also saved the Padres on the average unit value of his contract. And that whole trade from Boston's point of view just did not make any sense to me.
Right. Give me a guy who is going to be the first one up this year who is going to be able to help this ball club. Who's a guy who maybe pitches or hits his way into on the opening day roster? Who's going to be the guy? I'm thinking it might be a bullpen arm, but who's going to be the one that jumps in and is like, this is the guy who is helping now that maybe we didn't think about all that much?
I'm not sure I can go there. I the easy one, I think, for me to go is Morahone. And the reason I say Morahone is that I don't think Morahone is a relief pitcher. I mean, I think Morahone is a starter. When you watch him pitch, he throws in the high 90s, but it's a very straight fastball. And what he does really well is he has a great slider. He's got an outstanding knuckle curve. And when he was pitching in the minors, you know, he had a certain schedule. He knew when he was going to pitch. They told him before, and you're coming in the fifth inning, you're going to go to fifth or sixth, even in El Paso. And so when he was coming out of the bullpen at the major league level, I never thought he really got a great feel on his breaking stuff. And some guys are like that. And that was kind of, if you kind of go way back, that was the whole argument on Trevor Hoffman being in the Hall of Fame by some guys saying, well, anybody can be a relief pitcher. It's just a failed starter. No, that's not true.
That's such a stupid argument. I hate that argument.
But I'm just throwing that out there that I think Morahone, if he's given a chance, and this is kind of where you got to, you know, find out what you have, because remember the Padres paid, not only did they pay $11 million for him, but with the taxes, it's $22 million. And when he's on, Morahone is as good as anyone. So I like to see what he could do. I would next put Jay Groom. I think he might need about 7 or 8 starts, maybe in El Paso, to see what kind of takes from the spring. And supposedly he was going to go work with Joe Musgrove, according to Chris Kemp. And, you know, Pedro Avila's one. A personal favorite, because I interviewed him, was Reese Kinnear. And the reason is because I go on Darren Smith's show a lot, and Darren will give me grief about for going to Arizona State as an undergrad. But Reese went to Fordham. And I said, well, you know, this guy I go on the radio with, he gives me grief all the time for going from ASU. You must have some smack you can give me from Fordham on him, because he went to St. John's. And he goes, you know, I'd love to, John, but, you know, St. John's is always too scared to play us. So I really don't have anything on him. So I would like Reese to make it just for that reason. But Reese is someone who kind of gets hurt at El Paso, because he throws a four-seamer with a lot of run and a slider, and the ball does not move as well in altitude. So his numbers actually in the majors were better. I think he's kind of more of a – I think he strikes me more as a multiple-inning relief guy than a starter, and that's kind of what Sandberg said last year. But those are some guys I would look at there. And then Campusano, as we were talking about before we went on the air. Yeah, I think Luis is the type of guy who – you know, I've flip-flopped on him more than an animal act at SeaWorld. But one thing I've never flip-flopped on him is, you know, physically he has the ability. I mean, I saw him hit one, I think when we were on last time, Mark and I were talking, Mark Wilkins, one of our writers, were saying we saw him hit one off the Scottish Rite Center in El Paso, Southwest University Park, which is beyond the left field wall, this huge building out there. He's got tremendous bat speed. He's athletic. He's a very solid 5'11", 230, can throw. The thing with Luis, and a lot of people in the media in San Diego have kind of hit around other things. And I think on our site when we write it, and when I come on like Darren's show or on here, you know, a lot of us hear things, but we don't really know if they're true. So if no one really wants to repeat something that isn't. But in the three times that I went out and I've seen Luis when he was in El Paso for series, you know, sometimes he wasn't as into it. Sometimes he didn't hustle as much as he could. You know, there was one of the series I was at, they had something where all the players went up and signed for kids and Luis didn't want to. And in all honesty, you know, Luis doesn't really like doing interviews. He hasn't talked to us in a couple of years, even though, his family subscribes to the site, has since 2016.
Interesting.
Which is interesting. But he's always been very polite about it, been very nice. And I think, you know, some of it's on Luis, but some of it's on the Padres. I thought he should have been in San Diego last year. There was nothing really for him to do in El Paso. There certainly is nothing for him in El Paso this year. So I'd love to see him get a couple of starts a week behind the plate and maybe about 1 or 2 turns as a DH. If he gets at bats, I mean, he could hit between 15 and 20 home runs with a good on base. I mean, he's the real deal.
And you take that from the catcher position all day. Oh, yes. That's typically not a position where you're asking for a whole lot of offense. You don't want it to be as bad as what Austin Hedges was giving you, but you're not expecting Mike Piazza either. It's with him, it's you go, people think immediately of, okay, well, you've got the off field stuff with, you know, the arrest for the marijuana. Is that being held again? It doesn't seem like it's popped up again. He seems like that was maybe a one-time thing. So kid just made a bad decision, made a bad mistake. Is anything else like that? Is it dogging him now? Is it still a concern for the organization, but they really don't have any other places to go? Is it that other teams don't want to take a flyer on him in a trade, or do the Padres still think, yeah, we think he figured something out last year, we're going to give him a chance to do it this year and learn behind Austin Nola?
He came out in Baseball America and he did talk about he had some anxiety issues and he was working on that. You know, I think when I saw him this past year in El Paso, I was about as down on Luis, you know, as I had been. But I think the big thing that changed him was just going up to the major leagues. And I think, you know, Joe Musgrove cannot get enough credit for sitting there and working with him and doing things. And that's kind of the thing a veteran should do. And I give him a lot of credit for that. And it looked like Luis was just much more into it. You'd see him at the top steps of the dugout. You'd see him. He didn't have a problem if he didn't play that day or not. He was becoming a pro. And also, a lot of us got to sit here and think about this. The major league minimum is $700,000. If you're on the 40-man, it is a lot less. I mean, most of us would not be in a great mood knowing we're making about $600K less than being there, especially if we thought we were better than the guy that was above there. But I think he's matured a lot. There's just so much for a major league catcher to do. So it's not like he's out there in left field. He actually can play a little bit of first base. I've done that occasionally with him. So, you know, as I said, go back to Darren's show where he had Jim Bowden on. I mean, if you and I are running the Padres, we kind of tell the coaching staff, look, this guy has talent. It's up to you guys to get it out of him. That's what we're paying you for.
That's really the entirety, the reason the coaches exist. Yes. And why Bob Melvin's such a great manager is look at the rosters he had in Oakland and he won. He's gotten the best out of every tie, every player he's ever gotten his hands on. He's gotten the best out of them. And even guys like Josh Donaldson, you know, when they leave, they're still good. They're not quite what they were when they had Bob Melvin as their skipper.
Melvin's
maybe
really
a
good
whole year with him can help out a guy like Camposano, who has all the, like I said, all the physical skills in the world.
I do, but I think one thing too is a lot of times major league managers that were catchers or something can sometimes kind of be maybe a little too tough on these guys because, you know, they know what they had to go through, and especially guys who may not have had the talent that Camposano is. You know, Camposano is a really tough guy. I've seen him take some just god-awful shots behind the plate, and he gets right back up. And
he was a second-round pick. Like, he's a talented guy.
Oh, God, yes. God, yes, yeah. And, I mean, the guy, they gave more money to Blake Hunt, and they ended up trading Blake Hunt away to Tampa. But, yeah, you know, I mean, as you said, I mean, and we've talked to a number of scouts, and they supposedly he was on the trading block, and they didn't have any takers. But as one or two guys have told me, and I hate using the anonymous scouts, but I'll do it for this time, they've said physically he is as talented as anybody in the minor leagues at that position. And when you have
including Shea Langeliers.
Yeah, and including the kid from at Baltimore. They said physically he's
Bradley Rutschman, really.
Yeah. Now that's one guy's opinion, and he could be totally off on it. So, but you know, you watch him play. I mean, when he's on, I mean, he can do some damage to all fields. You can watch him run. I mean, when he wants to run, he can do really well. I mean, but just he's going to have to kind of meet the Padres halfway, and you know, kind of like Morahone, this is his best shot. If it doesn't work out here, I'm not sure what happens next.
You mentioned Joe Musgrove working with him, and yeah. Joe's been great with young players. He's working out with Fernando Tatis Jr. right now. I'm not sure if it's actually right now as we're recording, but he's been doing workouts with him during the week, you know, getting him in the pool. Same thing he did with the Mike Clevengers of the world. It was Joe and Clev when they were having their bullpen battles. It really snapped Clev into a nice little stretch there. Mm-hmm. Is Joe Musgrove underpaid? Because I think I can legitimately make that case that everything he does, not just on the field, but off the field, and how much he means to this team and these players in this community. How important is that man to this organization right now, given everything that he does and can and continues to do?
Well, I think it's like what we said earlier when we were talking about Jay Groom. I'm talking to Chris Kemp. He's got about three or four of his scouts around. He's talking about different guys, and he's excited about Jay Groom. And then the very next thing he says to me right then, he goes, we want to get him with Joe Musgrove. We want to get him working with him in the offseason. We want to get him, you know, the shape, to see how to pitch, to do things. And I mean, that's just a great compliment to him. It's like, you know, hey, we got to get him with Joe. And I mean, I think that's fantastic. So, yeah, I mean, $20 million, that, you can buy some nice things with that. So,
Especially if you don't have to buy your own beer in San Diego.
Yes. He shouldn't. I mean, giving us a no-hitter, so we don't have to take grief from other fan bases about that. So that's good on Joe.
Yeah, that man should never have to buy a meal in this town.
No.
Who do you like? Who's going to be – we always like a pet project kind of guy. Mm-hmm. Who's your pet project in the Padres system right now? You look at him like, I don't know why, but I love this kid, and I'm rooting like hell for him.
Oh, you know, that's kind of an easy one because the guy I put at number 30 on my list. I got to talk to him when I went out to Elsinore at the end of the year. And it's Duncan Snyder. And he's a guy who is 6'7". They signed out of an independent league. He played in two independent leagues. He played in the first one. It was in the Pecos League. He'd gotten hurt in high school. Then he went to, I think, Eastern Iowa and wasn't good there. No one would take a chance on him. He did a tryout with a Pecos League traveling team and was in Tucson, where he was driving around in cars, and sometimes they would pay them gas money. Other times they wouldn't. He was pitching in the American Association of one of the former, I think, Lake County in Ohio. The guy who's a special assistant to the Padres, the former catcher, A.J. Ellis, happened to see him. He set the record. He struck out 20 guys in 8 innings. And they gave him a shot. And he was 8-1 with a storm. He, you know, he's about 23. He'll probably, if he does well, he'll probably be in San Antonio pretty quick. He should be in Fort Wayne this year. Just a really nice kid, a great story. Anybody, Eric Yardley is another guy he's talked to who was in the Pecos League. And anyone that has ever played there is just so incredibly grateful for anything. Anyone talks to him, anyone has any interest in him. And so, yeah, he's a nice kid, and it's a great story. You know, he's and also, you know, he's 6'7". He's athletic. He has a bit of a hitch in his, you know, his delivery. Someone who knows pitching vastly better than me, who's worked, but I'm sure we'll be working with him in the offseason, and let's see what happens.
There's a guy I love, and I forgive me, I don't remember if you have him on your top 30 or not, but Alec Jacob.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun. He's not in my top 30, but I did interview him in El Paso, and he's another guy. He has the same agent as Jackson Merrill, and oh, nice. He's a lot of fun to talk to.
He's a lot of fun to watch because it is all elbows and knees coming at you. And he's got, I'm not sure he throws 90, but he throws.
I'm not sure he throws 85.
He's so funky. He's so funky the way he throws. And he does a little bit of that Johnny Cueto thing where he really varies his delivery. He'll do, you know, do like a little hesitation. He'll do a slide step. He'll do a big leg kick. He'll quick pitch. He'll slow it down. He's kind of all over the place. He went to Gonzaga. He was on the mid-round pick, you know, nothing you're going to write home about. Can a dude like that in today's Major League Baseball, where you've got – it's all high velocity. It's velo, 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 velo. Can this just throwback dude come in and have success at the Major League level now? I guess we kind of saw that a little bit with Nabil Chrisbat over the last couple of years. He's a changeup specialist who can still get up there a little bit. But can Alec Jacob, this dude, that's like my pet project guy. I'm going, I would love to see this guy throwing at the Major League level because he's just so stinking odd and unique to watch.
Well, when you say he's unique delivery, and of course this is a podcast, so it's tough. If you're listening at home, just stretch your arm out about as far as you can to the side at about a 45-degree angle, and that's where the pitch is coming from. So if you're a right-handed hitter, and the ball moves so much. There was a guy I remember I talked to years ago, actually was from San Diego, James Needy, and he was a starter. He was doing well, and I asked him about coming out of the bullpen, and he said, no, I'm a 6'6", I'm a sinker ball guy. Guys like me, it's either going to be a starting pitcher or nothing. He goes, in order to come out of the bullpen, you either got to have a bazooka strapped to your arm and you throw something occasionally to get them off it. Or, like in Alex's case, you got to have some funky pitch that moves at such an ungodly thing that the three guys who see it maybe once in a series can't handle it. And that's kind of where he can get to. I mean, the one thing about Alex is when you talk to him, is he understands with him, it's not about velo. With him, it's all about movement. And he very much understands who he is and what he's trying to do. So, you know, he got to AAA pretty quick. I mean, he puts up some numbers. Let's see.
And there's something to be said for even if he's like 23, 24 years old, for a guy to understand who you are as a pitcher at that age, I think there's something to be said for that. It shows a maturity level and it shows an acceptance of what you can do to really take what your skill set is and try and amplify that as much as you possibly can.
Well, you know, a guy that they just hired to be the pitching coach at Lake Elsinore, Thomas Eshelman, I saw him pitch in San Antonio this year when he was like 28. And kind of on the same way with Alec, Eshelman pitched, I think, about a three-hit shutout in 7 innings. He might have hit 87 twice in the game. I mean, everything was a cutter, down, curve, two-seamer, up, and this. And, you know, Thomas made a great point. I said, man, you know, you talk about some guys, you know, say they didn't have a feel for their curve or slider. He goes, how's that with you? What happens then? He goes, that never happens to me. I don't throw hard enough that I always have a feel for this. I have to have this. And so one thing about playing professional baseball, and this is kind of what Wellman was real good at, is if you're going to last, you're going to figure out really quickly about what you can do and what you can't and how to maximize what you can to give yourself the best chance. And that's what Alec did. Alec said he even figured that out kind of in college. You know, he said at Gonzaga, I think he told me, you know, he got into a rough spot and he was just trying to throw too hard. And it screwed up his ability to move the ball. And, you know, Eshelman, I think, will just be a fantastic pitching coach. I mean, if he gets some kid in there who throws like 95, your first directions to the kid is going to be, okay, Thomas is going to speak, and you're going to, the only time you're going to talk is to ask him a question about what he's told you. Okay. Cause he's going to give you about two pitches to go with this giant heater that you have that's going to get you to the major leagues. If you choose not to listen, a double A hitter can hit a fastball if that's all you got. And that's something that when I first started doing this, it took me a little bit of time to realize that about a couple years into it. And I think it was actually Paul McAnulty told me a good story, because there was a guy that we ranked really high and he saw him at Fort Wayne. He was 6'5". He had this big fastball and he had a slider and it was a chase one and he was getting hammered. And I interviewed McAnulty and at the end, turned off the tape recorder. I said, hey, what's up with this guy? I mean, why isn't he good? This is what I saw. And he goes, well, look, he's got a good fastball. We can all see he can't throw a slider for a strike, so we don't do it. He doesn't like to throw his changeup because he's scared of it. And he goes, you know, I'm not saying I'm great, but if I get to face some guy two or three times a game and I know the only thing he can throw me is a fastball, I'm going to hit the ball hard. Some might get out, but I'm going to hit the ball hard. And that's something that is really tough for a lot of the younger guys to learn. They what's that guy doing hitting 95 back at me? Well, they can do that. You got to have something to keep them off of.
It's Nuke LaLoosh, man. Your fastball with authority, but in the bigs, everybody can hit the fastball.
Oh, double A, everybody can hit the fastball.
Yeah, that's all they see nowadays. You know? Yeah. One guy I want to ask you about, Victor Lizarraga, local kid, East Lake, down, yeah. And of course, he also went down to Tijuana to play ball. Looked like he's had some pretty good outings. I haven't seen him throw yet, but I looked up some numbers. Looks like he's got some promise there. What have you seen in him?
I liked what I saw. The guy one of the guys on our staff, David Jay, he did a really good interview with him. And, you know, he was at Montgomery when COVID came along. He went down to Mexico, got his residence there so he could kind of go to pro ball. Eric Young, who was his manager, just raved about him. He reminds me kind of a college pitcher who's 18 years old. And when I say by that, the reason I'm maybe a little lower on him than others are right now, I'm not saying it's going to stick like this, but he throws about, he can touch 95. He sits kind of in the low 90s. He's very good at going in and going out with his fastball, and he has a good changeup. The problem is, if you pitch like that well in A ball, you'll be very successful. You get up to double A, as we just talked about, you got to have a slider. You got to have some breaking pitch you can throw for strikes, and you can get someone to chase. And so a lot of guys, you know, I've seen this and I've made mistakes on guys too, who I thought were going to be really good. Like, I think Kavius Sampson is a guy that comes to mind, a really older prospect, is really athletic, good pitcher. If you throw between like 89, 93 and A ball, you're going to be pretty good if you hit both sides of the plate. But as I said, you get up, all those guys can hit that fastball. They got an idea how to seek out the changeup. You got to have something to keep them off. The good news on Victor is, you know, he's only 18. You know, I think in high A in Fort Wayne, they're really going to be working with him just to get that consistent breaking pitch, get it good, get him confident. So when he goes up to double A, you know, he's armed for success.
And I think the other guy that Padres fans might have some familiarity with, because in spring training a couple of years ago, he had, I believe it was 118 mile an hour exit velocity home run. Oh. And at Fort Wayne, he hit a 500 foot home run. That'd be Joshua Mears. He was tearing the cover off the ball for a while. and he got plunked. And after that, I think it just something went haywire with him. That kind of like legitimate crazy power threat that we've seen, can you do it consistently?
That's a great question. And that's the toughest prospect that we all had to talk about. I mean, athletically, I mean, Mears, when Robert Hassel got traded, Mears is a 6'3", 245-pound guy. And like both of us, he's about 3% body fat. I mean,
he's Ray Lewis, basically. He's a freakish human being. And I think, I think if you took the 3% and multiplied by 8, you get our body fat.
He can move, and put it this way. No one, and Robert Hassel was joking about this. None of the outfielders or infielders are not aware of where Joshua is. There's no one that's kind of running there and they hear Joshua going, I got it. People move. Now, the part about the power, it might be on a 20 to 80 scale. It's at least a 70. I mean, it is freakish. But the problem with him is, you know, mentally, he kind of gets in his head a little too much. I'd like to say it was like Estuary Ruiz last year, because a big problem on what Ruiz was having was he would chase too many pitches out of the zone. In the zone, he would absolutely crush him. The problem with Joshua is he gets in streaks where he misses stuff out, misses stuff in the zone. When he gets a hold of him, he absolutely crushes it. But he has a strikeout rate of around 40%. And
That's not going to get better when you get higher either.
No, and they got to really work on that. I think from what I understand, he had some problems in Fort Wayne. I went out and saw him right before he had the huge week, and I think he struck out in about 75% of that bats. I didn't want to go down and talk to him. He's a nice kid. What I'm going to ask, hey, what's the problem up there? I mean, if I could do it, I'd tell you. And David talked to him. You know, he's working on his approach. When David saw him, it was better. I was a little shocked he was moved up to San Antonio, but I think it seemed like they just wanted to get him out of that environment. We'll see. I mean, that's definitely a coaching challenge to work with Joshua. I mean, it's there. I mean, just can you get it out?
One thing as I'm doing this interview, and folks listening on the podcast, you can't see this, but when I asked John about a new prospect, his eyes closed for a little while. And it's almost like you remind me of Sherlock Holmes, like you're going into your mind palace and you're thinking. And so are you like going back through your Rolodex mentally to get to these guys? Is that because I think it's fascinating because it's almost like you have all this at the tip of your fingers, which is fascinating and incredibly admirable for someone who also tries to keep a bunch of information in my head, but I can never figure out how to get to it.
Well, you're a lot easier than my day job where I'm breaking down Indian and Chinese steel statistics and the anti-dumping laws. So this is a little more fun. And you're also being nicer than my wife. It says, don't close your eyes and look like an idiot if you're on TV. So I appreciate that.
Hey, Taylor, for someone who looks like an idiot on TV all the time, it's okay to look like an idiot on TV.
Well, thank God it's a podcast. So that helps. It helps me out a lot.
John, what else you got? I mean, is there something out there that you were just kind of thinking like this is the key, this is the thing, this has been ruminating in the back of my consciousness that I want to make sure Padres fans know this year, good, bad, or indifferent?
You know, I would say this again. It's like, you know, we had a little bit of a chat before I went on, and you know, when you see these lists or you hear people national talk about what the system is and is not. As you know, right now they are in the bottom third in Major League Baseball. They do have some.
Well, how much they've unloaded lately? I mean, for them not be 30th is a testament to how well they scout.
No, I can remember going on podcasts where people would sit there and go, "Do you think Preller just wants to build the top farm system and not trade anybody?" No, honestly, that was a true comment, which is weird. But I would say this is that, you know, a lot of things can change by midseason. You know, one guy we haven't talked about yet is they got Dylan Lesko, which was a really good pick in the draft. And something where the Padres see that they have as many scouts as any team in the major leagues, and they think that they can find talent. A good example is, I mean, if I asked you in the Juan Soto trade, who is the best prospect you think went over there? They're all good.
He's one of those pet project kind of guys. James Wood is my favorite.
No, that's
McKenzie Gore might be the best.
True. But here's the thing is that James Wood was a guy who was picked in the second round. And there was a really good story with the development guy, the scouting guys, how they went down there and they kind of dug around. and they found out that he was a lot better than some of the initial people had thought. You know, Jackson Merrill was picked 27th. You know, the other three guys, Hassel, Abrams, and Gore were all in the first eight. But the Padres have believed that they can find guys who are rising quicker because they have more scouts, more eyes out there in the field. A good example is in the last draft, one of the guys that helped get Josh Hader was getting getting Robert Gasser. They picked him as kind of a rising pop-up. And that's kind of currency, that you have to be able to hit on those guys to do that. So when you're looking at the minor league system, I think there's two things. It's not just about some guy, you know, starting in the ACL and ending up in San Diego. You know, it could be about this guy's good. He helps us get someone to win now. And part of the thing I would tell some of the affiliate guys is the Padres are in a window now. I like James Wood as much as anybody. I have a vested interest in wanting to write about James Wood. But you have Manny Machado in his prime. If they're going to win, and I don't like the phrase all in, this is going to be a really important year. I think this might be their best shot. So if it's moving guys to make the major league team better, which is what the minor leagues are for, you have to do it. And, you know, we'll see what it's like midseason. You know, Lesko is going to probably pitch in June or July. Robbie Snelling is a really good pick. They spent 80% of the draft money on pitching. You know, Adam Mazur could be someone to keep an eye on. Henry Williams, the guy they got from Duke. And we'll see what happens with Sammy Zavala, who is playing center field in the Cal League as a high school senior and pretty much holding his own. He could be someone that could pop up in the top 100 by the end of the year. So hopefully that wasn't too long winded a speech.
No, it's not a speech. It's fantastic information. And Wood is a guy who I started, well, after we talked to you, you were like, watch James Wood.
Right.
And I started, okay, I'll check out some of his games at Elsinore. He's 6'7", and he runs like a deer.
Right.
But his hands at the plate. I remember a guy when I was working in Arizona, Richie Sexson was there. And when he got a hold of the ball, he did, but it's a long swing. It's, you know, just naturally when you're that big, you're going to have a longer swing. Wood, when he was swinging the bat, did not look like a guy with levers as long as he has. His hands were so quick through the strikes. And I was like, this is different. You look at someone and say, that's different. That was different. Like you watch LeBron James play, you say, that's different. Dave, he just looked different in the batter's box, and the ball just jumped off his bat. I was going, man, I'd love to hang on to this kid, but it's Juan freaking Soto.
Yeah.
You do
for
it.
For 3 years. Three. Right.
You do that.
Yes. And the best line on him that I heard from anybody, and maybe you'll blow the horn of on sight, is I like what Mark Wilkins said, a writer. And Mark's 6'8". And Mark made a great comment. He goes, he tries to watch tall guys, you know, not next to someone, so you realize how tall they are. And then you see he would watch Woods, and he's coming in, jogging in, and goes, oh, my God, he really is that big. He is a huge guy. And, you know, that was a great story by Mark Connor about what the Padres saw. They went down. They met with him. You know, he had gone to the IMG Academy. He was putting a little too much pressure on himself, and once he got relaxed, and he has a different personality. Nice kid. He's just very cool and taking his own time. Plays real hard, you know, and I got to know his family a little bit there out in DC, and wish nothing but the best for James Wood and his family. They're great, great guys. I know he was sad to leave the organization. Merrill played with him on a travel squad. They both knew each other, so he kind of took it a little hard. And I think Jackson's kind of lucky in a way. He got hurt, or he might have been in one of those trades, because, you know, I've had scouts coming up. This has never happened to me in over 20 years, asking me, when is Jackson Merrill, have you heard anything when he's going to be healthy playing on the field? So I had that in two different spots, and I think David had that at Lake Elsinore too. So Jackson will be someone to watch, and hopefully I think going to Fort Wayne will be good, and he'll put up some numbers, and, you know, we'll see. Hopefully next year we kind of talk about where he fits in on the major league team.
In 10
after the World Series, after the World Series parade.
In 10 seconds or less, do we still believe in Michelle Baez or not?
You know, I don't know. I mean, the thing is, on Baez as a guy, I just went over the moon for when I saw him in Fort Wayne, because he was 6'8", and he was a lot more over the top. And so everything he threw was coming straight down. And since this is a family podcast, I can't really say what you were hearing the batters say, because he just couldn't make contact. He's been hurt. I mean, he's coming back. You know, look, we'll see what he can do in El Paso. I don't think he's going to make this. I think the squad's too loaded for him to make it out of camp. And they kind of got to figure out what they want to do. with him. But the big sleeper, I think, is Groom. That's who I would say.
All right, like I said, in 10 minutes or less. Well done, John. Where can people find all your stuff?
I can go to medfriars.com, and half the site's for free during the season. We have a free daily rundown, which we try our best to make it up to journalistic standards. We take that seriously, but not ourselves. And then in order to fund our trips, we charge people $5 a month or $40 a year, and all the money goes either for hotels, rental cars, or flights. None of the food, which you see me devouring in El Paso and San Antonio, a barbecue, which really gets your partner Darnay much more excited than you. And none of the money goes for that. And so we all have full-time jobs, and that's the only reason that we charge. And we thank everyone for having us on and helping us promote our site so we can go out and have some fun.
Well, I'll tell you what, it is really good stuff. I really enjoy reading it. You guys, yeah, I'm a little bit hard on folks who write about baseball because, you know, I feel like I know the game fairly decently. I really enjoy reading what you guys do. You guys definitely get it. So thanks for giving us all the insights because you're boots on the ground, man. You're talking to these guys, you're seeing them in person, and you know what to look for. So it really is cool. And thanks for coming on the podcast, being such a good friend to On Fire and OGs, mind you.
Oh, I'm looking forward to going to OGs when I'm in San Diego. And yeah, it's a blast doing it. I mean, getting a chance to hang out with guys like Philip Wellman and some of the Padre guys and, you know, kind of moving up just slightly above being a fan. I'm still a fan of the Padres. I can remember going there in 1976 with my dad to watch Randy Jones pitch. So it's been a long wait. I want to see a World Series. I'm an old guy now.
RJ's Cy Young Award year.
Yes. Yeah, that was fun. Well, thank you again for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, John, appreciate it, man. Everybody go check out Matt Friars, and thanks for listening again to the On Fire podcast. We'll see you all next week.